Mini episode 281 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 281. Today, taking a look at the NBA picture in the summertime here, free agency, trades, but a little bit more under the surface as well, taking a look at the NBA Summer League and seeing what is going on there and then what developments are going to manifest themselves for next season. I am FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris, and I am joined by another of our great FDH Lounge dignitaries, my good friend, Managing Editor at That NBA Lottery Pick. You can check it out at thatnbalotterypick.com. The one and only Ben Chu. Ben, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing good, Rick. How are you doing?
Oh, doing fine. Always love to talk hoops with you. And as I referred to it a second ago here, we got this great summertime reality show on TV, as we do on a lot of different channels. This one happening to be on NBA TV. It is, of course, America's Next Danny Green, or the NBA Summer League, as it is sometimes known. And taking place from Orlando, I know you have been following it very closely.
Yes, I have, Rick, and this year, it's one of those rare years, Rick, because normally most premier rookie talent plays in the Las Vegas Summer League, but this year most of the rookie talent was actually in Orlando, guys like Victor Oladipo, Olynyk, Steven Adams, and Michael Carter-Williams from Philadelphia. And overall, this is the first new year for their new sort of tournament scoring system, to where you essentially would get 3 points for a win, and you would get a point for each quarter. So was there a little bit more of a buzz going on in Orlando because of this system? Not really. But at the end of the day, if you can make the games a little more exciting, I would always think of it as a good thing.
Well, overall, again, I follow this, but you, of course, that's your full-time job. You're doing this with that NBA lottery pick. You are, of course, following this very, very closely, more so than most of us year in and year out. Yeah, I don't remember this much buzz around Orlando in years past. Is there a particular reason for that this year, where some of the top rookies migrated there?
Rick, I think overall it was a mixture of two factors. One factor was that with a lot of the premier Eastern Conference teams being at the Orlando Summer League, we got a chance to see a lot of those higher drafted Eastern Conference rookies. But also, I think one of the other issues we have to touch on is just there were injuries to a lot of other rookies going into the Vegas Summer League who aren't going to play, guys like Anthony Bennett and Norlene Noel. And this year, I mean, I think there's a little more buzz because people are starting to realize that if you're watching Summer League and you're watching Summer League action, you're going to start to see who could shake out as a possible improved player for your teams, either on your bench or they could be a future star. There were a lot of guys who I thought, you know, they came out and they played exceedingly well. And then there were guys who had big problems that just sort of fell off.
Well, in terms of some guys whose reputation had fallen off last year, not necessarily because of anything they'd done, but because they at one time had been pretty highly touted college players, and we haven't heard much about them since they came to the pros. Two guys that come to my mind when I'm describing what I just said there, Terrence Jones and Jeremy Lamb, a couple guys who did get some opportunities in Orlando, went out there, made the most of it. How much do you read into something like that? Guys who have the great pedigree coming out of school, or at least once they were in school. Certainly by the time they were drafted, there was a little bit of luster that had come off that pedigree because neither one of them were top five picks, as might have been expected maybe at one point during their college careers. But if you're looking at rehabilitation here, of one's professional image, what the capabilities are perceived to be, and solidifying yourself at a bare minimum as a rotation player on an excellent team like both of these guys are hoping to do, how important is what they just did in Orlando to that goal?
Well, from what I hear from a lot of people, especially a lot of NBA insiders, and you can also hear this with some of the player interviews during the games, after the games, in Orlando and in Vegas, that it's a nice structured format, because especially with the NBA going into the summertime, there's not a lot of structure for guys where they can play and where they're allowed to play. There are charity games and, you know, the Drew League and the Goodman League out in L.A. And I think a lot of players are now starting to realize that if you're a young guy who needs minutes, who wants to play in meaningful games, that the Summer League is your place to do it. And specifically dealing with Lamb as a player for Oklahoma City, he's going to have to step into that role that James Harden vacated when he left the Houston. And I was impressed by his play. He's a guy who can go out, get buckets, and nearing the end of the first Summer League game, he had a chance to win it, and of course he was able to pull it out. But at this time, especially for Oklahoma City, who had to face Houston in the quote-unquote finals game, Oklahoma City's just youth and depth really showed out. Guys like Reggie Jackson, Jeremy Lamb, and Steven Adams, their young rookie, they just were incredible players. And just switching gears quickly to Terrence Jones, he, for me, was always a tweener when he played at the University of Kentucky. And honestly, I feel that he'll have an impact in that rotation with Houston now. They're going to need a guy to come off the bench, play a little bit of three, play a little bit of four. And he impressed, especially with that Houston Summer League team. And there were plenty of notable names on that Houston Summer League team, including Patrick Beverley, who most of everyone will remember. He was the one who took out Russell Westbrook in the first round of their playoff series last season.
It's a Freudian slip there, hustle like Russell. But
yeah, hustle like Russell, right? That's it. Hey, at least I didn't say like Russell Brand, Russell Crowe, or something at that point.
That's true. That's true. But you went to the one that's in your mind as a good Seahawks fan. No question about that. When you're talking about OKC and when you're talking about the young guys like that, another guy that comes to mind is Perry Jones, the third. So wondering how you think he may fit in there. And as far as it goes with the other Jones, Terrence, do you see him being a good stat sheet filler? That was a guy that I always thought at a bare minimum he'd fit into a rotation. You're saying he can play some three, he can play some four, but he seems to be like the kind of guy that can come off the bench and give you a lot of different elements at either position.
Yeah, with both of the Joneses, you can see that they have the athletic ability. They're big guys. They can play both three and the four. And the real question for both Perry and Terrence going forward is that they have to fit into a rotation where they're probably not going to get a lot of minutes. And they're probably not going to be expected to score a lot of points. And after a while, you have to look at the situation for them, and they have to reach their high ceilings when they were coming out of their rookie draft class. And at times, you have to understand that some players, it takes them a while to get into the game, and then there are some who just burst onto the scene and are able to do things relatively easily.
Well, in terms of bursting onto the scene, when you're looking at what just unfolded in Orlando this past week, if you want to call him now the hometown boy because he was playing for the host team, Victor Oladipo, the first-round draft pick, of course, of the Orlando Magic. Thoughts on how his play materialized? He's a guy who, again, they're envisioning, I think, probably at this point as a combo guard. In a perfect world, they'd like to see him assuming some point guard duties, which, of course, that was kind of foreign to him at Indiana, but sometimes when you're a guy that size, they're going to expect you to try to at least learn the handle when you get to the pros. So what were some of the good and bad elements, as you saw it, of Oladipo's pro debut in Orlando?
Well, in terms of Oladipo, for him, he's going to have to learn how to make his own shot. Because in summer league, for the first two games, he was able to get open looks from three-point and hit some jumpers. And after a while, it's going to become a question for him is that, is he going to be more of a facilitator on offense, or is he going to be the guy that essentially will play that role of he'll be able, if he needs to make a shot, he can make a shot, or he can be that slashing type player that can make it to the basket. But the real issue I feel for him at times is that even though he is 6'6", he's one of those guys that to me feels like he's undersized at the position. And there were times, especially in later games, where teams were in the summer league would just put a bigger guy on him and he would be less effective. But in terms of totality of the rookies in the Orlando Summer League, I felt that he had arguably the best performance out of anyone, and especially in his final Summer League game before the playoff structure format game started. He had a big shot late with about 10 seconds left to win it for Orlando, and I feel that he can be a star. The real question is he that once-in-a-lifetime star complimentary piece in Orlando, or is he just a la Scottie Pippen, who's a really good player and will probably have a possibility to make it to the Hall of Fame if he has a fantastic career, or is he just going to be a guy that stays around the league for 10 to 12 years?
I think that the most logical guess for a lot of people might be somewhere in the middle of that spectrum that you just named. And when you're saying 6'6", I'm thinking to myself, was dude wearing lifts? Because I've always heard him described a little bit closer to like a true 6'4". But are they saying now that he could be closer to 6'6"?
I think from what I've heard, Rick, is that they sometimes list him at 6'5", 6'6", in media guides, but I've never seen Oladipo at that height. I've always thought he was a smaller 6'4" guy, but apparently, the media, the NBA media guys, Kayla, you can give yourself an extra 2 inches. I give myself an extra 2 inches being 5'11 and the 6 feet. So if Victor Oladipo can do it, I can do it as well. So,
a little less consequence to what us media guys fudge versus a guy that's got to go out there on the floor, But you look at the performance of a lot of these guys, a lot of the rooks coming in, and it's going to be a pretty grim 2013-2014 season up there in Beantown. They are flat-out tanking for Wiggins or Jabari Parker. But somebody that they're looking towards as far as being a rotation player this year and beyond that, Kelly Olynyk, the Canadian big man coming down there, who had, it looked like, a pretty good session in Orlando and seemed to show some pretty good flashes. So is it possible to get carried away with how he looked at this point? Is he projecting as possibly anything more than a useful rotation guy going forward?
Well, at points, especially in the Orlando Summer League, Olynyk looked like a premier starting power forward or center within the microcosm of the Eastern Conference. But at times, you can understand, especially with Olynyk's game, is that he's a spread guy. He can put it back to the basket and score, or he can step out and shoot three-pointers. For me, overall, I liked his game playing when he was at Gonzaga, and I think he unfairly dropped a little bit in the draft because since Gonzaga got ousted in the second round by Princeton during the NCAA tournament, a lot of guys didn't get to see a lot of him playing in those games. And I felt at times during the summer league he was able to facilitate, which especially in the new NBA 3.0 where everyone is going to be using a lot of penetrating and kicking out the guys for three-pointers, having a seven-foot guy being able to pass the basketball is a premier and important part of today's NBA.
Oh, it certainly is. And he's a guy who really, it seems like, surprised some people in a positive sense as far as his play. When you're looking at summer play and somebody maybe surprising some folks in a negative sense, at least relatively speaking, it does look like all the momentum that was built up during March by Trey Burke has kind of gone by the boards in recent months here. He didn't get off to the greatest start for Utah. What does that bode going forward? Does it seem to indicate that there's going to be any kind of an adjustment period in the pros for him next year, or you think it's just a short-term stubbing of his toe that he'll be able to work out during training camp and the start of the season?
Well, Rick, overall, I feel that Burke's Orlando Summer League performance, and it's always tough to judge these because I like to always use the example of the Damian Lillard, Johnny Flynn period of time when they were both in Vegas Summer League, that you could tell that there are certain guys out on the floor who are much better than everybody else. And then there are guys who have good Summer Leagues who we project to be better than they actually are. For me, in dealing with Trey Burke, I think he's a fantastic player. He's a great shooter. But the major issue I felt was that he's undersized. He's an undersized guy who can play the point and the two position. The problem for him is going forward is that he's going to be dealing with a lot more guys. They're going to be thrown at him at the shooting guard and small forward position because it seems like to me when he got looks, he was able to make his shots. The problem was any time they would throw a big body at him, he just did not have any ability to make a shot. And after a while, and you can understand his game at Michigan was spotting back, having like 2 or 3 inches of space and getting three-pointers to go in. And in the NBA level, while you can do that, I don't think he's one of those guys that can create his own shot at times.
Yeah, that's going to be a little bit of an issue. A name that came up briefly before, Michael Carter-Williams of Philadelphia, an interesting game. You didn't know how he necessarily was going to fit into the pros with his skill set. Kind of an interesting player still developing, and how's he going to fit in Philadelphia, which, like Boston, is in full-on tank mode. So what were your thoughts on MCW's first week in the pros here in Orlando?
Well, if there's an old saying goes that sometimes you can shoot fish in a barrel and sometimes you just got to shoot fish in a sea. It felt like that at times Michael Carter-Williams was shooting fish in the sea because he had horrible shooting performances. And there's also the argument that, you know, shooting percentages in the summer league, they don't really matter. But there are at times, like if you shoot 33 or 34% in two straight games, you have to take a note for that. But to be fair, I think in the totality of the 2013 NBA draft, Michael Carter-Williams is the biggest tweener because he has point guard skills, but he has a shooting guard body. And it's going to be interesting because especially with teams trying to push towards having more athletic guys, is it a good idea to put Michael Carter-Williams at the two, put him at the one, or what is his role? And I think that's the real tough definition with a lot of tweeners in today's NBA is that they don't really have a true position, but you have to mold them into something that can play a certain position after a period of time.
That's true. You know, when you're looking at a bigger guy that's got the capacity to play the point, do you suppose that Philly has taken a look at somebody like Tyreke Evans and what he's done the last couple of years and maybe using that as a template for where Williams might be the most comfortable on the court?
I think that's a very distinct possibility, and it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But the issue is that they're going to have to find that other premier scoring talent that will allow Williams to defer. And it's going to be interesting, especially with Philadelphia. You have Williams, you have Noel, you have a team that's in flux after they moved Drew Holiday to the New Orleans Pelicans. It seems that Philadelphia is going to be one of those teams that will either tank and get a great draft pick or it'll be middle of the pack for the next couple seasons in the NBA.
Yeah, they look like they're in full-on tank mode like a lot of teams do for next year. So it's hard to even rate a lot of teams when you're looking at the fringe of the playoff picture for next year. But in terms of, again, it's been chewed over a million times to death about Houston and Dwight Howard, Chris Paul staying with the Clippers. But as far as some of the other moves, the solidification that the now New Orleans Pelicans are making, the Cavs bringing in Andrew Bynum to go with Jarrett Jack and Earl Clark. What were some of the moves around the fringes of playoff contention in the NBA this summer that you found most interesting?
I found overall, I mean, obviously the Bynum one, the Cleveland's very interesting. I think a lot of people didn't expect him to go to Cleveland just because they already have that deep front court of guys like Varejao, Tyler Zeller, and Tristan Thompson. But essentially, they essentially signed him for a 2-year deal about upwards of $20 million. Most of that money isn't even guaranteed in the first year. I feel overall it's going to be the best analogy for Andrew Bynum is essentially the Cavs are taking a risk on him, similar to if you were asking the hottest girl in your high school to the senior prom, already knowing that you already have plans with the girl next door who's lived next to you for years to go to the prom with her regardless of the situation. So essentially, the Cavs are playing with found money. And I think, you know, the way the Eastern Conference is shaping up, them being a 4 seed or a 5 seed, they have the talent to possibly make a deep run into the Eastern Conference playoffs for the next couple of seasons. In terms of other deals, I'm very interested to see, with Grievous Vasquez moving from New Orleans to Sacramento, how he's going to truly fit there because they have a loaded backcourt right now of him, Isaiah Thomas, and Ray McCallum Jr., who's playing exceptionally well in the Vegas Summer League at this point. It just really seems that Sacramento is still in rebuilding mode, but they're also trying to retool their whole organization, especially with all those rumors that they were going to go up to Seattle for that period of time. So I think in terms of Grievous Vasquez, I think he's a great talent, but I think he's just going to become a stopgap measure for many teams.
Yeah, they have no idea, or at least haven't the last couple of years, what they're doing with the rotation, where all the pieces fit. The analogy with Andrew Bynum with Cleveland is a very good one, Ben. Regrettably, I never experienced the pleasure of that kind of a surplus in high school myself, but I can relate to it on at least a theoretical level. Any other thoughts on the summer landscape of the NBA, how things have changed and moved about in the summer of 2013, anything we didn't hit sufficiently so far?
I think a couple quick things I want to touch on is I think in terms of the new tournament format, I like the idea of teams having meaning and having a champion at the end of the league, but I like to call the modified Stableford system of scoring points isn't exactly the most interesting at the end of the day. I would prefer just teams play 3 or 4 games and then you take the best 4 in and the best 4 out. Very quickly, 2 quick points I want to get to And the Brooklyn Nets did not look anything like a decent summer league team. They only won, had 5 points at the end of it. And a rarity, especially in the Orlando League, is that Jason Kidd, the Brooklyn Nets' current head coach, got some chance to talk and, you know, deal with the rigors of coaching an NBA game. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that translates to other, you know, to his dealings with the veteran-leaded Nets team. And very quickly, I just want to touch on a couple of guys that I felt that were incredibly great during the summer league in Orlando. Houston's Robert Covington, he played at Tennessee Tech. He's a three-point shooter that's probably going to be a guy on their roster for years to come. Phil Pressey, the son of former Bucks legend Paul Pressey, had a great period of time with the Boston Summer League team, being their second point guard, has a possibility to be that guy behind Rajon Rondo at the end of the day. And one guy who pretty much surprised everyone, including myself, he was on Miami Summer League team, Belmont's, the pride of Belmont, Ian Clark, who is a great shooter and who I feel, if he can latch onto a team, can be a guy like Eddie House and just go in and create instant offense off the bench. So overall, I think the Orlando Summer League, much to say about a lot of things. And hopefully we get more questions and answers coming up within the Vegas Summer League as well.
Absolutely. And the guys that can create that kind of instant offense off the bench are vital. I know that my Cleveland Cavaliers have been kind of dying for that kind of punch off the bench the last couple of years. And, you know, it's a commodity that's highly prized around the league. So we'll be looking to see who all solidified in the areas that they needed to this summer in the NBA.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.